everyone. Welcome back, and Happy New Year. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez. This is This Week on Channel 9.
That's right. How was your little break there?
It was wonderful.
Yeah?
I learned to snowboard, which was fun and exciting. And
Now, in real life, or while playing Skyrim?
It was not in Skyrim.
Okay.
It was not in Skyrim.
Nice.
I learned to snowboard and was actually off the grid for a while because I was in West Virginia, and they don't have much internet.
Oh, they have the older internet there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, so with the banjo and it wasn't...
The AOL CDs and everything, that's where they're all at.
Yeah, Prodigy lives.
Yes.
So, what about you?
Me, I just kind of stuck around, didn't really do much. I mean, I did a lot. I did a lot of work. I didn't get a lot of vacation time, unfortunately.
It's too bad.
Getting ready for the Visual Studio 11 beta. A lot of content to work on. I do it for you guys. So,
all right, let's get right into it.
That's right. So, Channel 9 has a brand new feature, which I have to say, I didn't even know this was coming. So, this was a nice little holiday gift here. But this is a really, I have to say, really nicely implemented video queue right on Channel 9. So, if you are watching a Channel 9 video and, say, you see another one that you may be interested in, but you want to finish watching us first before you jump over to, say, Larry Osterman, then you can just add that to your personal video queue.
Yeah, there's a lot of times you're looking through and, you know, maybe it's an event and you're like, ooh, this one, this one, this one, this one, and this one.
Yeah.
So, and the ability to actually have progress and know the details on progress for each video.
That is a clutch feature, which I don't even think YouTube has it. Or if they do, I don't know how to utilize that feature where you can be watching, you know, you're in the middle of a Charles video, which could be an hour long, and you're halfway through it and you need to run and come back. Well, I don't think YouTube even supports the ability for you to remember your location. You guys should extend this so you can support YouTube videos as well. Just saying.
Okay. Well, the model, you know, there are video sites like, say, Netflix that do stuff like this.
Netflix does, yes. But
okay.
YouTube does not.
I'm just saying there are other people that inspire.
I see.
Okay.
I see.
There you go.
All right. What's next?
Next story, the roadmap for the 10 laps around Silver Lake 5, Michael Crump did this. So this is kind of his first post, but really we did the screening here to show all the kinds, the types of topics. So from things like binding features that WPF developers are probably familiar with, like ancestor relatively sourced, so like a child can reference a parent. In its data binding, the XNA3D API, which is definitely cool.
The low latency sound we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, you know, just going through some of the stuff, pinvoke, full trust, things that people are always interested in, 64-bit browser support, which is nice. XAML binding debugging, which, you know, John Pop, I remember, showed it at the Silverlight Firestarter, and people were like, oh my god, I want it.
Yep.
That's one of those things where, I think XAML binding debugging should be, like, a must-have feature for anybody doing XAML.
Right.
Like, you know, whether it's Windows 8 Metro or Windows Phone or anything.
And I love the title that this is 10 laps around. I mean, most people just do a lap around. This guy just keeps going. He's like the Forrest Gump of Silverlight, authors.
I'm sure that's what he wants to be known as. That's wonderful.
Yes, I mean that in the best way.
So this is another series of tutorials around Silverlight 5, and it's really a collection of beginner-level articles.
That's right.
So for people who are going, what is why do you need debugging and XAML binding? You may be asking yourself.
This one's for you, Mom.
Yeah. Or how does it all work? Then you can see some basics.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Which brings us to one of our favorite people on Channel 9 of all
time. How much do we love Larry Osterman?
Yes. Absolutely love him. Like, any stories that he has are just ever so epic.
Well,
so.
We were actually, right before this, before we taped this, we were watching Larry, and we, like, need to tape the show, and we're like, we can't pull ourselves away from listening to him tell these stories. How many people do you know that can say things like, when I was working on Windows NT 3.1?
Yeah, and, I mean, just on that reference, he's talking about, like, how big Windows is, and, like, at the time around NT 3.1, there was probably four people that actually could know the entire code base. Now he's like, there's no way.
Yeah, well,
there's 100 people.
I do. I happen to know it.
Oh, you?
Yeah, but
you.
But I can see why a lot of people have challenges.
I have I discover new features in Notepad.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Status bar? Word wrap?
Word wrap? No way.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Unicode? Jesus.
Yeah. But seriously, this is a great story. It's he's one of these computer scientists who continues to evolve his art as it goes. He's not one of these guys who just sits around and, like, focuses on what he knows. He's really passionate about the science and evolving that and looking back retrospectively. And
a great storyteller.
It
has to be said, but he's just a great storyteller.
I remember one day I was on the bus, and Larry Osterman got on my bus, and I think I text messaged you. I'm like, Larry Osterman's on my bus. This is so cool.
That's great. So mobile and global and 7 steps with HTML5, MVC, and Windows Azure. So what is this?
Yeah, this is a really great article that goes through in 7 easy steps how to create a mobile web application based on AD, and then deploying that into Windows Azure in geolocated data centers. So if you're opening up the application in Europe, then you're going to be hitting a local data center there. Mm-hmm. And I mainly liked it because it rhymes, mobile and global. Haven't seen that title before. But I also liked because they really broke down very succinctly all the different steps that go into thinking about this. And I like the way that they did that. It makes it really easy to think about how you would go about architecting your own application to do the same.
Okay. So this is actually a TechNet article that goes through some of the things that you can do on the Windows Developer Preview to basically simulate touch using C++ and the Touch Injection API. So the idea is you can do things like simulate gestures like a tap, a drag, a rotate, and some of the other gestures that already exist, and you know, basically changing mouse events to touch events.
So you're doing this, so using your mouse, how does that work exactly?
So what this app basically allows you to do, like say for example I want to be able to test my Windows 8 Developer Preview mm-hmm. application, you want to basically simulate touch input in some way, shape,
like a pinch, right?
Something, right? Yep. Sure.
This can't do that with my mouse because it's a single point.
This application basically, and this is developer level stuff, mm-hmm. right? So it's basically you can do things like map, you know, that I'm tapping at or dragging from, you know, X to Y, 00 to 050 or whatever, mm-hmm. however distance that was. And you can do that programmatically. So for example, if you're doing UI automation tests, mm-hmm. if you don't have a touch monitor, but you want to simulate what's going to happen with touch and how things are going to interact, mm-hmm. this is basically the tool that you're going to use.
Got it. Okay. That's cool. Seems like it'd be useful.
Now, Mimo Magic Mouse is Magic Touch USB monitor. So the idea is this plugs in via USB and mounts and only powered through USB, and it mounts as basically a monitor. So the cool thing is, because this monitor is about the size of the Windows Phone emulator, this guy got drags and drops. Imagine having two monitors. One is basically that size of the Mimo. He drags the emulator over, and he can now do simulation flicks.
So Windows sees it as a second monitor. Is that right?
A second touch monitor.
Got it.
And the emulator supports touch, and you can do things like, for example, you just open the browser and start zooming in, and it all plays and feels really sort of nice.
Do you remember how much they're selling these for?
I don't have the price off the top of my head.
Got it. Well, that seems like it'd be really clever, especially if the price is right.
Yeah.
So our friend Arturo Toledo, friend of the show, so mm-hmm. He put together, he's been doing a lot of speaking around the world, helping developers really embrace...
And designers.
And designers really embrace Metro-style design for the phone. I'm hoping he's going to do the same for Windows 8 when that's ready as well. He's put together this post, which kind of captures a lot of the different content that he put together. And from what I've heard, it's just been getting rave reviews. He's been, like I said, all over the world. I think for the last 6 months, he's been on the road something like 3 or 4 months, which I thought I traveled a lot, but this guy is never around. Just excellent content. I've always had a lot of respect for Arturo. He does great stuff. And so definitely if you're looking to really think about how to take your Windows Phone applications to the next level, check out this series.
Yeah, I think the nice thing even about this post is it gives you sort of the hey, here's our design principle. If we had a glass design principle, here's what it would look like. Because we're not, ours is sort of this flat, simple, get to the content point of view. Here's the way we look at the same concepts with our design principles applied.
Mm. Yeah.
So definitely cool stuff to check out.
Yeah.
So this is a series of learning resources basically designed for people that are, and some of them aren't necessarily programming, like Khan Academy, for example, is everything from calculus, trigonometry, even riddles. videos that kind of explain stuff. So I love Khan mm-hmm. Academy.
We've talked about them before.
Yeah, free. This is a series of free learning resources, mm-hmm. and you know, a number of them are around programming. So like the MIT's Open Courseware. So if you're interested in learning algorithms or computer language engineering, similar to Stanford engineering courses on programming methodology or Agile or whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. There's a number of resources, and they're all available for free.
That's great.
New interoperability content on MSDN. So what is this exactly?
Yeah, so Microsoft has a team of people whose job it is to focus on how do you interoperate between not only different products within the Microsoft family, but also Microsoft and Java, or Microsoft and, I don't know, MySQL, or any number of other solutions that are out there. And so historically, they actually had their own website. It was off of Microsoft.com, so it was harder to find. And now they've actually moved everything over to this MSDN Developer Center, and they're taking a fresh look to how they architect their content for easier discovery. And so not only is it a good reminder that these resources out there exist, but it's also kind of an update that this is where you go to find them, and we'll have the links to in the show notes.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing is, you know, if you look back on the screen, if we switch back, yeah, the interactive pivot there, you can actually search through and select a specific product and get the specifications on it. For example, for Exchange, all the specifications related
protocols, to file formats.
Yes,
yep.
Yes, on the open specification promise.
Yep.
So lots of cool stuff there.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the ALM Summit, Application Lifecycle Management Summit.
Right.
So this is Scott Densmore, right?
Yeah, so we talked about the ALM Summit, and we're just going back and looking at some of the best of sessions there. And so this is a session by Scott Densmore where he talks about unit testing. You know, we all are familiar with unit testing. It's one of those things that we know we should do, but just like flossing, we don't, I don't floss as often as I should. and so it's one of those things.
We are so not kissing after the show.
How do you get into the habit of unit testing? What are the right approaches to doing unit testing? And so I think Scott takes a really balanced approach to say how you kind of ease into it, what the right approach is to figure out what unit tests you need. Do you need 100% coverage, or is it really more important to kind of take a holistic approach to figure out where your code
and
most likely to regress?
And test one and only one thing, sort of the mm-hmm. core principles to unit testing.
That's right. So again, free content, lots of really highly rated sessions. Which brings us to
our picks of the week.
Picks of the week. So my pick of the week is kind of it's for you TFS administrators, or what my friend Martin Woodward likes to call you accidental TFS administrators who find yourself administering the TFS server. This is, you know, what service packs and hot fixes should I install? So this is from our friend Grant Holliday, friend of the show.
Yeah.
He I don't know if you knew this. He actually is down in Australia now. He left the TFS team and he's now down in Microsoft Consulting in Australia, doing a great job. There,
everybody gets deported eventually.
And so this is a post by Grant where he talks about the fact that, hey, we've got a lot of, you know, not only the major service packs that everyone hears about, but we've got a lot of hotfixes that Microsoft support publishes that unless you are digging through looking for a specific issue, you may not even be aware of. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a Team Foundation server administrator, Grant goes through by each hotfix and he says whether or not you should apply it. Because most of the time, if you're not seeing a symptom, you usually don't want to apply a hotfix. But sometimes there can be some good hotfixes in there which may prevent some possible data corruption down the road.
Sure.
Or some performance issues or something like that. So I really like this post, again, for you TFS guys out there.
So my pick of the week is Windows Live for your domain. So what this is, and Jeff Sandquist turned me on to this, is you go buy a custom domain. Mm-hmm. So, and I've been meaning to do this for a long time. Got danfernandez.me.
Nice.
And what I want to do is just have full email and full Exchange, right? None of this, like, you know, a hosting provider where you get, you know, the GoDaddy of the world where it's this POP3, you read it and it's off the server and all that stuff. So what you can do is you get basically all the features of Hotmail, mm-hmm. but with a custom domain for free. So you go to the Windows Live Admin Center, tell them what your domain is, set up the MX record on, you know, the GoDaddy thing, which mm-hmm. is MX. It'll tell you exactly what numbers to put in for the time to live and all that other mm-hmm. wonderful stuff. You click OK, and then you sign in on Hotmail to, you know, whatever your you set up email address inboxes first,
right.
I should say.
Right.
So Brian at danfernandez.me, for example, is my administrator. And you sign in on Hotmail there, and you get full access. And the nice thing is it includes everything to have full Exchange support, including on your phone.
So that
contact syncing, push,
calendar.
Everything. Calendar.
Tasks. Does it have tasks?
I don't think
Hotmail has tasks, if I'm not mistaken. But
we'll
get back to us. But that's awesome. That's really cool.
So, yeah, it's one of those things where you've probably been putting it off, getting your own custom domain. There's some great .me domains, I should grab charlestory.me and...
Yep, definitely. And I think that most, universities actually use this as well, because they've been pushing for a long time the live at EDU, and there's some, I don't know, tens of millions of people that are using that. So if you're at a university, especially in the United States, chances are it's actually back-ended by the live services, and so that's what provides you with a lot of email services.
Yeah, but a lot of people want, you know, like you may not necessarily want to apply for your next job at, you know, sexy in Seattle, or sleepless in Seattle, whatever, at hotmail.com or gmail.com instead of, say, Brian at briankeller.me, which I also own.
And for a low, low price, it can be mine. Yeah.
For a low, low price.
Sounds good.
That's our show. Thanks.